Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Morts.
Good morning.
Wearing salmon.
Salmon
this morning.
Yeah, it's a favourite
that
of mine.
That is salmon.
Is it salmon?
No, it is definitely is, because I've had a jumper of a very similar colour. That is salmon.
Yeah, I like it.
It suits
like
the skin tone as well,
it
Paul.
It does.
I must
it's lovely.
He
I
is
do
dressed
like
well.
A light colour.
Dressed
you.
Well for the radio. I know, that sounded worse. That sounded worse. I didn't mean that. He's dressed well. And he's on
and
the.
He's on the
he's yeah,
I'd take.
It.
I'd take that.
I was. Now you said the Villa West Brom. I didn't watch Villa West Brom yesterday. So
yeah.
It was dull.
It was. I mean, the first half was okay. Second half was dull.
It's West Brom.
Dull.
It's West Brom.
It was Villa that got me because they just moved the ball too slow. And this is the blessing, the curse of Grealish, because he got a lot of the ball but just held on to it. They crowded him out and they didn't move the ball quick enough. Became predictable. And, you know, once Brunt got sent off stupidly after 80 minutes, they played for penalties, West Brom.
So they got, West Brom got Dwight Gayle sent off in the first game.
Yep.
And Chris Brunt sent off in the second game. And also stupidly, yes?
Two of the stupidest tackles. Chris Brunt had already been on the yellow. And it's on the edge of the box. I think El Ghazi's given the ball away. And he's just dived. It's one of them. Normally, it's one you take a yellow card for the team. It's one of them. If he got past him, he's in at the back four and they're in a bit of trouble. But he'd already been booked. And he knew it straight as. And the fans knew it. And all the players knew it. He was going off.
Right.
Initially, I actually thought the ref bottled it because he stopped. And all the players, Villa players complained. And he stopped. But it appeared he was just having to think. And then he realised, oh, I've booked him already. Off you go.
Right, okay, fair enough. But so West Brom then play for penalties at that point.
They had to.
Were they playing for penalties before, or were they going to win it?
I would say they were playing. Once they scored, they were literally. I mean, Villa played well. Then they had a spell, West Brom, and then scored, and then they stopped. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
They stopped. They stopped for a long period. They stopped.
I've always had a soft spot for West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah.
I have. You know what? I mean, people of my age, we see Cyril Reid just
That's
bombing
right.
forward and belting one in the top corner. Brendan Batson, who his niece has been in here a few
That's
times.
That's right. Yeah.
That team, Brian Laurie Statham,
Cunningham and all
Laurie,
of them.
Laurie Cunningham,
Brian
John
Robson
Ryle,
played for him.
Them.
Remy Moses.
Really
yeah.
good.
Yeah, good side, yeah.
Really good team. And I also feel sympathy for people who live in West Bromwich as well.
No, I do too. Yeah, I've lived near there.
I've been there. It's a tough place. So I like their football team, but I don't like this football team. I
no,
think
it's
they're
not.
They're negative. And I listen. Kieran Gibbs served Arsenal very well.
Yeah.
Watched him many many times running up the left, but there's something a bit. Dull and prosaic.
They are dull. They need a shot of something that's going to give them some life. They play this survival football where they kind of strangle the life out of the game. That's what they do. They just.
Well, I watched the first leg or most of the first leg, and it wasn't great.
It's not pretty.
But Villa were at home and they had the crowd behind and they were attacking. But at the Hawthorns, I sort of felt. I mean, I was working last night.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to watch it. I did to a certain extent. But I mean, a Leeds derby tonight might be interesting.
I think it'll be a better game.
But I wasn't going to watch West Brom last night because I know that every time I do, I just think, what am I sitting here watching these for?
It's the Villa. I mean, you know, having been an ex-player, I want Villa to do well. Dean Smith, I love. I know quite well. And he's a good guy. And I want them to do well. For the game, for the neutral, Villa had to score first.
Yeah.
Because if they score first, West Brom have to come out. The minute West Brom scored, you kind of knew how the game was going to, the pattern it was going to take. Villa with Grealish probing, West Brom sitting and playing for that one set piece or that one chance or that one Villa mistake.
Villa were
trying to pass out the back and it was like Arsenal at the start. You remember when Arsenal had a pitch check? They just created more chances for West Brom by trying to pass out the back. And after a while, they kind of read that script. It wasn't working. And then they're more direct.
I mean, I don't mind teams trying to pick other teams off, right?
Yeah.
I understand that is a tactic that you can do. There's a certain lack of ambition about it that gets me. But I guess they don't feel they have the players to play a more expansive type of football. I mean, let's be fair. Alan Pardew came in and tried that with him, and it went horribly wrong.
It went hot. He was the. You see, if that's going to happen, they have to have a year of transition where they have to say, look, we ain't going anywhere. We're going to just experiment, because they will need a complete clear out. Because all of their players, they're big at the back. They play a certain way.
They've got some players. I mean, Chris Brunt can play.
Chris Brunt's older than me.
Morrison can play. What's his name can play?
There you go.
Rodriguez.
Jay Rodriguez is a good player.
Jay Rodriguez can play. Kieran Gibbs.
Do you know
the strange thing?
As much as we say that, Rodriguez and I think Dwight Gayle are near the 20s for goals this season. So, you know, they've scored goals.
It is working.
But they just play this ugly form of football that is horrible on the eye.
This is Love Sport.
Do you know I once heard diving on the radio? It was a really weird thing.
It's a joke coming
in. No. It's not a joke.
Diving on the radio.
I heard it, and he comes up, and then you heard the boing as he hit the,
now, get the board. Go away. Go away. I'm not.
And the smaller the splush, right, you knew the better the dive, because it's all about making the lack of splush.
I knew that was coming.
No, I'm just saying.
I knew it was coming.
Just diving on the radio.
I knew there was a joke in there
somewhere. Not a joke. I listened to Diving on the Radio one time on another radio station. Not this one. Anyway, other radio stations are available, but not as good. 6 minutes past 7 o'clock. I am, by the way, to continue a conversation we had in the interval. Sorry, I'm too much into showbiz.
Lovely.
In the break, we had. I will be watching Eurovision on Saturday night.
Okay.
Will you not be watching Eurovision?
No, it's
on
not
Saturday
my cup of tea. I used to love it as a kid, growing up, and everything. It's because when we had a chance. We haven't got a chance now, so I don't want to watch it.
We used to have a chance
when I was a kid.
I don't know who Britain's representative are. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's nonsense now.
Paris is actually looking up. But there's a lot of tactical voting and all that.
And some of them used to go on to have decent careers.
Michael Rice. It's Michael Rice.
Okay.
It is. Right. Bigger than us, is he?
Okay.
He's 6'10". Oh, that's the song. That's the song. All right. Michael Rice is bigger than us. Ooh, you're a big fella, aren't you, Michael? But anyway, I will be watching it. Of course I will, because it's, you know what it is?
It's
the campus show on TV,
and
it's hilarious for that reason. Two, they're holding it in Israel.
Yeah.
And obviously there are, it's in Tel Aviv, I believe, which is... not far from the Gaza Strip.
Right.
Where, and a stone's throw, essentially.
Oh, God, you can't say that.
Oh, come on. That's funny, isn't it? No? All right, a bit too early for that. Anyway, it's not far.
You're wrong, you know.
It's, so it's camp, and it's brilliant fun. It's tremendous fun. And what you do is you're on social media for the whole night, on Twitter.
It goes on a bit long, though.
It does, but you're on Twitter, and you know, it's essentially, look at her, what's she wearing, what the hell are they singing about, that's a bit rude, whatever it is. It's tremendous fun. I would recommend it to anyone. You have a little party, and you watch Eurovision. I know this is not what you're expecting from the Love Sport Comedy Breakfast Show, but I'm just saying. England beat Pakistan yesterday in the cricket. And they won quite well, actually, 45 overs. They still had 5 overs left, and they knocked off
Incredible.
A target of 359. They are awesome. And I think what was interesting, actually, was the fact that they did it without Jos Buttler and without Jofra Archer. They have got a serious one-day team, England. What they've got, and you would tell me if you agree with me, is they've got weapons all over the pitch, right? This one doesn't get any runs, that one will get runs.
Yeah.
That one doesn't get wickets, this one will get wickets. Yeah. That's what they need.
You know what? For the top teams in world cricket, that's what you need. They've got no weaknesses. They've got no... And when they do, let's say one of the players doesn't fire, like you said, someone else. Jos Buttler had a rest on the back of, 100-odd? Unbelievable score. He comes out... Johnny Bairstow then takes up with 100 on, and all the others step up as well.
But we've talked about Strong. Man City. We've talked about Man City this year in the football, and how, you know what, if Sane doesn't score, then Mahrez scores, or Sterling scores, or Aguero. And even the cricket team has a similar thing, doesn't it?
And you look at the people. You see, the test of a good side is what's in reserve. So if you look at the people they've left out, That and they still win and win well. That tells you how frightened the opponents will be of them. Pakistan are a good side.
Yeah, a very good side. Yeah.
And if you consider, you know, I think it was Imam, 150.
Yeah.
And he was brilliant. I've got to say, you're sitting there thinking, oh, do you know what? This is going to be a decent game.
I like to see a sportsman in glasses. I genuinely do.
It's a strange thing to see.
It's nice to see a sportsman in glasses.
Yeah. Yeah,
I would suggest.
And not just sports glasses, then ones that are strapped around your head.
Regular glasses.
Just regular glasses.
Bits of sellotape on either side where he'd sat on them earlier. And I like that.
But
fact.
He smashed the ball all over the place. So you're thinking, yeah, do you know what? We're going to have to do a bit. And they did. And that's, you know what? This is the type of test the England team need. Now they want to go against someone who are good with the ball. Good bowlers. We want to really test our batsmen now. We want to really test our bowlers now. Because I think what we've done at the moment is frightened everyone, you know.
Well, they've got this 5-day series, and then they're into the World Cup at that point.
It's about peaking at the right time, and these lot look like they're just about going to be ready.
Okay.
This is Love Sport.
Good morning. Aston Villa needed penalties last night to move within just one game of a return to the Premier League. They won the penalty shootout 4-3. The goalkeeper, Jed Steer, saved two spot kicks and was asked by Sky Sports News if this feels like their year.
Definitely. We're playing good football, moving it nicely, and, you know, yeah, we're well up for it. You know, bring on Wembley.
I mean, to be fair, what else is he going to say? Does this feel like your year? Nah.
No.
I mean, why would anyone...
We're going to get
questions.
Beat.
I mean, I understand. It's in the heat.
We got lucky.
Yeah. Well, let's have a chat with the former Aston Villa midfielder, Andy Blair. Morning, Andy.
Morning, chaps.
Do you think this could be Villa's year, Andy?
I can understand young Steer being euphoric, having saved the two penalties that he did. But the pragmatic, realistic side is, let's hope it is, and let's hope we can see it through in the final there against Leeds or Derby. But I hope so. And Dean Smith's done a fantastic job.
You're on a good run, though, aren't you? Let's be fair. I mean, if anyone had the big mo, the momentum going into these playoffs, it was Villa.
It was, but I thought the two games were very, very close, as the result proved. So there was no out-and-out favourite in that. Yes, we had the momentum, but... sometimes, and it's proved many times in playoffs, and which are a fantastic concept, aren't they, lads, for football in general.
Yeah.
They keep the season alive for so many clubs. It's whoever thought of that, give them a knighthood, because that is brilliant. They have got the momentum, but West Brom were there, and it was close last night. I genuinely think the turning point was Brunt's indiscipline during the course of the second leg, and I just thought then that Villa turned it round and managed to get through on the penalties, of course.
I have to say, Andy, I also think that the end of the first leg cost them with Dwight Gayle, because he's a goal scorer. And any chance, you know, West Brom would have come into this keeping it tight, hoping any chance fell to him, because he is a proper, genuine goal scorer at this level. So losing him was huge. Losing Brunt, a couple of bits of ill discipline. But I did think that Villa were the aggressors. They were the team, I think, who came in both legs looking to win. Really, you know. But on the night, I think too much went through Grealish. That's just my personal opinion.
Yep.
Because it meant that they slowed everything down. Even when they went a man more, they slowed everything down. They didn't move the ball quickly enough. And they became somewhat predictable to play against.
I agree totally. So you don't need my views.
Yeah, we do.
No, I cannot disagree with anything you've said at all there. It's spot on. However, with Gayle on Saturday, he was a little bit unfortunate in that the first booking was stupid and just harsh. The second one, he's gone in for it. I'm not sure. That was rash. That was a yellow card, I believe.
It was. Some people,
But as it turns out, you're spot on. Grealish was very good on Saturday.
Changed the game, didn't he, Andy? Really? Changed the game. The laid-back for the pass for Conor Hourihan's shot, which that was an unbelievable shot as well, wasn't it? It was beautiful. And then the penalty.
Yeah, he certainly has been the best player over the course of the two legs, and he was the difference. And
Will he stay, Andy, if Villa don't go up?
We'll debate that one, should it be that happens. But creativity and offensive play always, I think, deserves to win the Order of the Day, and it did for Villa, because you are right. Villa were wanting to look to create the openings and score goals, whereas I thought West Brom were totally pragmatic and defensive, and I'm not going to say boring, but boring.
No, they were. It was dull. Yeah. I thought parts of yesterday was dull because West Brom suffocated the life out of everything.
They did, but again, there are teams that win championships like that, and I think in the Premiership we've been blessed with the Liverpool-Man City challenge, and the style of football these days is absolutely brilliant, I think. So therefore, long may that continue, and again, I started our interview by saying how well Dean's done. He has proved to be an inspirational appointment for Villa, because he, wherever he's gone, he has set his teams up to be, first, hard to beat, but they have that offensive side. And for a centre-half, that's not bad. He's done well.
No, he certainly has. We'll leave it there. Thanks very much, Andy. Nice to speak to you.
You're welcome.
See you Take soon. It's a former Villa midfielder, Andy Blair there. Dean Smith has done a good job. He's got them into to be a team, hasn't he? And when they were 1-0 down at West Brom in the first leg, you feared for them. And they came back, and they've obviously got the class player on the pitch in Grealish, and he turned that game.
As long as they defend properly, they are so they can, you know, when they get it right. What didn't happen last night? What they normally do is they're quite expansive. They make the pitch big and wide, and when they do that, Grealish has the space to be able to go and play, because what he wants to get is 1v1 against someone.
Yeah, because he can go past them.
What happened last night was, because they didn't open up the play, whenever he got the ball in the middle of the area, in middle of the pitch, is where most of the bodies were.
Yeah.
So he couldn't do what he wanted to do. So they didn't really play the expansive switching play, opening the pitch up so that the midfielder, the opponent's the midfielder.
I like watching Grealish, though. I mean, I really do. Footballer. He's a lovely
footballer.
But he
has to leave. He has to leave. As far as I'm, because I think if he was in the Premiership now, he'd be in the England squad. Because we don't have a midfielder like him who can receive the ball and suppose the Ox is probably as close to him. Because he'll run with the ball through midfield and gamble.
Different sort of player, the Ox. He's closer to Gerrard, the Ox. I don't see Grealish. I mean, Grealish does get 20-yarders, but not many.
Yeah, oh no, I'm not even talking about goal scoring. I'm talking about the way that they move the ball from, let's say, 10 yards into their half up to the edge of the box. Because he'll go and, what he'll do,
he can do
most
that.
Central midfielders are frightened to go and dribble and take people on, like wide players.
Yes.
He's like a wide player. He'll go and take him on 1v1 and beat two or three players and then produce.
I would like to see him in the Premier League this season. I'm sure that Villa fans will say, well, hopefully it's with us and we'll see how that go. But if he does leave, there'll be plenty of suitors. Oh. No doubt about that.
This is Love Sport.
A survey for you that's kind of saying what success means in the workplace, what people think success is in the workplace. Yeah. What would you say means you succeeded in the workplace?
Total subservience from everyone to me. But other than that, I'm not really that bothered. I'd like you to call me Lord Stone, if that's
Lord
okay.
Stone.
I don't know. Success in the workplace. I think the main thing is just that you all get on and you treat everyone the same. You treat everyone. Jurgen Klopp, they were talking about Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, and now he talks to everyone the same. The tea ladies, the players, he's rude to all of them. That's a joke. He's really nice, and that is that's success in the workplace, if people get on in that way, don't you think?
Yeah,
From the lowliest producer to the highest upon highest presenter, everyone gets on the same.
I feel that was a slight...
I kind of read that script too.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. Okay, well, apparently, people disagree with you. Apparently, flying first class and having your name on the office door.
See, these people deserve slapping in the face on a regular basis.
A slap in the face from Lord Stone.
Both of them. Both having a name on the office door and flying first. I'd love to fly first class. I've flown Premier business class once. Yeah. Premium economy. Mm. And it was, the seat went back about 2 inches further. That
business
was
class. Nice. I went once to Dubai. Oh my God.
Lovely.
Yeah. It's lovely.
It
spoils you. You don't want to fly any other way.
No. Quiet. Once you turn left, you can't turn right.
Can't,
I get all that. But you know what? It's never happened. And that is not how I define whether my work is going well. It isn't.
Some more signs for you. Apparently, being the person the boss confides in, or also no one raising an eyebrow if you arrive to work a little late each day.
I can remember when I finished football. Well, in between, when I was an apprentice and left, went to work in the law bookshop for six months. The afternoon, and the law bookshop is so quiet.
I bet.
The afternoon, I'm on the front desk asleep.
Right.
So when people walked in the shop, the first thing they saw was me asleep half the time. They used to have to prod me awake because, well, I was a player. Well, afternoons, I'm at home in bed.
Well, I gave you a little, I gave people a tip. I used to work with a drawing board. And what you do, if you angle the drawing board at the right angle and put a pencil in between your fingers, you can sleep on it and people, it looks like you're working. No, I worked in an office for 10 years. In fact, did I tell you about the woman who I had a snog with a woman in a stationery cupboard, right? As opposed to a moving cupboard.
Cool.
In a stationery cupboard when I was 17 or 18. And Sandra, her name was, and she turned up at my gig in Ruislip. In fact, I'm doing Ruislip on Friday and she might turn up again. She turned up at my gig in Ruislip 40 years later.
Wow.
Not, I should add, with a small boy with a big nose. Have you met your son?
Love Sport.
Now, 1 in 8 adults in the UK have experienced suicidal thoughts or feelings because of concerns about their body image. Just over 1 in 8 UK adults, 13%, have experienced suicidal thoughts, according to a new survey by the Mental Health Foundation. Joining us now is Ed Davey from the Mental Health Foundation. Good morning, Ed.
Morning.
Morning. These stats are, I mean, this is the first time I've seen this. They're incredibly worrying.
They are very worrying, yeah. I mean, we've known for some time that suicide is the biggest killer of men in this country under the age of 45 and the biggest killer of women under the age of about 35.
Wow.
And I think if that was any other kind of any other cause of death, there'd be a kind of outcry about why we're not doing more and why, you know, it's a public health crisis, essentially. So it's really shocking to me that body image is associated with so many people's suicidal thoughts. But we've known for a long time that mental health is not in a good state in this country, and that suicide is a huge problem for us.
Ed, the stats are scary, and like you said, you know, we've there's bits we've known over the years. The issue is actually getting the information to people in a way that they can understand it, because most young kids sometimes won't even read this, because it's all stats-based. How do we find the way to get the information to the people that need help, and also giving them the empowering them to access help?
Well, you're right. You know, statistics are useful, particularly for professionals, but not everybody kind of engages with them or understands them. And I think people's personal stories are a really effective way of communicating. So, you know, we've had the royal family, Prince Harry,
yes,
talking about his experience of mental ill health, which is incredibly useful. Yesterday, we launched our report in Parliament, and we had a young woman who's like a rapper. She does like spoken word art, and she did a brilliant performance in front of MPs, sort of telling them about her experience of body image issues. And I myself, you know, I've recovered from, I'm 10 years this July, I've not had a drink of alcohol. I'm a recovering alcoholic.
Well done.
Well done.
Thank you very much. And like, I think the more that we talk about our experiences, the more we kind of give people permission to talk about their own problems and seek help. Because, you know, there is a lot of mental ill health and a lot of stress and de-stress.
Yeah.
But actually, there's a lot of help available. And just talking to each other honestly and trying to get help, especially men, you know, it's a sport radio, not to stereotype people, but I imagine a lot of your listeners are men. And, you know, men aren't traditionally very good at seeking help,
opening
and talking
up
to their doctor or talking to their mates. And we need to look out for each other and have honest conversations when we do need help. And it's not like any less, it doesn't make me any less of a man because I admit I've got a drink problem or I was depressed. Actually, it meant that I was able to be a better man and a better father and a better partner by getting the help I need, and now I'm, you know, a better human being all round, I think.
And this thing about, I've got a few questions for you, actually, the body image issue. Do you think there's a problem with social media, particularly with Instagram and things like that, that people see the way that the people are, especially when it comes to influencers, who of course can have a positive influence if they use it in the right way. But do you think that people see these images of people and they don't, I guess pornography has a part as well, they don't measure up and then they feel inadequate in that way?
Yeah, I do. I mean, like anything, I think there's a good and a bad side to social media. It can be really positive, like you say, you know, people discussing their issues and giving advice and signposting to stuff. You know, like a colleague of mine was responsible for the mental health pages of the NHS Choices website, which used to only get a few thousand hits a year, and now it gets something like 35 million hits a year. So when it's used as a way of people getting access to support and advice or hearing other people's stories of positive stuff, that's great. But sometimes, you know, and in our survey, one in five people said social media had adversely affected their own sense of body image. And like you say, you know, quite a lot of social media is like a showreel of other people's, the best bits of their life. So when you look at someone else's Facebook page or their Instagram or whatever, you're not seeing it when they're miserable or eating too much cake, when they've had a bad day or whatever. You're seeing them at their most glamorous and their most shiny. And that's really hard to live up to if you don't have a kind of Hollywood lifestyle. And that makes some of us feel kind of inadequate and not good enough. And obviously that's really, potentially really unhealthy. But like anything, there's good and bad. But I think, you know, when it tips over into the really unhealthy, like we had a lot of concerns about when there was cosmetic surgery adverts in amongst Love Island. And we complained to the Advertising Standards Authority, and they did get that removed because, you know, you look at something like Love Island or something, and you think, oh, I don't shape up to that. And then, oh, look, I can get a quick and easy fix with cosmetic surgery, when actually that's not the most healthy approach for nearly everybody.
No. My biggest issue is also, Ed, that, you know, almost one in five UK adults, the survey, adults 18 and over, the problem that we have is, and when we talk about social media, the kids' access to it, you know, it starts at 8, 9s and 10s. So by the time they get to 18, the fix is already in. And you know, it's very, very difficult to change their mentality because they've had 4 or 5 years of posting stuff and expecting the likes, because waiting for the likes is also important. So how do we get to those under the age of 18?
Well, I think it's education. I mean, I've got 3 children, including a 10-year-old girl, and she's doing this module in school at the moment that's really good on kind of mental health and social media stuff. And you know, things are different from when you and I were kids, and we have to educate our children to be able to deal with this stuff that perhaps, you know, people like of my generation didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
And I think we can do that, and we have to try and protect them. And it's really hard because she's been badgering me for a smartphone for when she goes to secondary school, and I've just about held out, and I'm going to get her, you know, a phone that she can't get onto the internet with. But I know that's a real battle lots of parents have. But we have to do our best to protect our children and educate them about using the internet and other sources of information safely. But yeah, it is a real challenge, and I think some of it has to be regulation needs to play a part. And not, we've seen, you know, the way social media companies have been manipulated to affect elections and all kinds of stuff. I think we do need to do more to regulate some of this stuff to keep our children safe and keep our society safer, frankly.
Thanks, Ed. Very good to speak to you.
To you, thanks so much.
See ya. It's Ed Davey from the Mental Health Foundation. It's part of Mental Health Awareness Week, and I think it's very apposite when we're talking about the Jeremy Kyle thing and all that stuff going on, and those figures on suicide for men under the age of 45 and women under the age of 35, I think he said.
Yeah.
Grim.
They are grim, but they're a, you know, product of the society we live in. And that's the problem. It shines a light on society and how we behave and the things that we think and see are important and how little we value our own selves in our lives. You know, we look at other people and we want to be like them because we don't value ourselves as much as we should do.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk about social media, really, because all those things, all those images, and look at me having fun. And you don't see the other 6 days of the week when they're not having fun because people don't post pictures of them.
Yeah.
This is Love Sport.
England's cricketers beat Pakistan by 6 wickets in their one-day international. Let's have a chat about that with the former Surrey Notts and England A batsman, Darren Bicknell. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning, fellas. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we're absolutely fine. Yeah. Loud and clear. Now, Johnny Bairstow was a bit disappointed he didn't get more than 128, but it was a great knot, wasn't it?
Oh, do you know, I don't know what this game's coming to. I can remember back in the day, 250 was a good score.
We were saying, Darren, I said the other day, I was talking about watching a Gillette Cup match with 60 overs, and Lancashire got 305, and that was like a record. And now they're getting 360 in 45 overs.
Yeah, no, the game has changed now. All recognition made, to be quite honest, and it's very exciting to watch. Although I do wonder, actually, just to qualify, whether people will get tired of just watching it being a bully fest, really, of just belting ball everywhere. Because I think, you know, people are quite interested in seeing a game of cricket where there's an even contest, really. I kind of worry for the bowlers growing up in the next generation, thinking, why would you?
Exactly, that was the question I asked Maltz.
I mean, Stubbley did say that, morning, by the way, but I think the challenge is to find that one bowler who can lead the way, who can be a trendsetter. Because if we see one bowler who everyone is frightened of, genuinely frightened, do you know what? I go back to the years where I used to watch Richard Hadley bowl, and you know, in the one dayers, everyone would wait till he'd finished, then smash everything to bits because he was that good. So, you know, it's about finding that one bowler who everyone can go, do you know what? I want to be like him.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think the problem we've got is not so much the bowlers. You know, you see some of the Pakistan boys last night, you know, clocking up 90 miles an hour, which is quick in anybody's book. But because the balls these days don't go off the straight, you know, they don't swing, they don't seam, they're playing on great pitches, you know, the quicker you bowl it, almost the quicker you're disappearing. So the only way that you can introduce a balance is to allow the ball or have the ball have some sort of sideways movement, whether it's swing or seam or spin. So the way forward, and certainly in the IPL at the moment, you know, you're seeing sides playing with sort of like three leg spinners because at least the ball is deviating off the straight and there's a bit of mystery about them, so it makes it less easy to hit. So I don't know whether it's the bowlers. You know, Richard Hadley in this day and age, yeah, look, don't get me wrong, would still be a fantastic bowler.
Yeah,
but Richard Hadley relied on the ball swinging a bit, seaming around a bit. And this white balls just don't do it. So even in this day and age, I suspect Richard Hadley might still go the distance like some of the others. So I think we've got to find a way. But at the moment, we probably need to just enjoy it for what it is. And it's definitely a run fest. And someone's going to get 500 in this World Cup.
Do you think, though, I mean, I asked a little bit early on around techniques, batting techniques, more gambles are being taken in a shorter form because it's far more prominent than let's say, you know, your longer forms of cricket where there's patience in terms of building a score. Now you've got this amount of time to score as many runs as you can. So the technique is different. People do gamble a little bit more, do smash the ball about a bit more and prepare to take risks.
Yeah, well, look, I think, you know, certainly sort of harking back to my day, you know, we used to get applauded in the nets by the coach if you left a ball outside off stump, he'd say, good leave, you know, whereas now these boys practice day in, day out hitting the ball, you know. They are physically much stronger than we were back in the day because they're trained to hit the ball in a specific way, but the mentality is very different of these boys. You know, we were talking to some of the Notts boys a week or two back, and they reckon, you know, back in the day, if a bowler put a long off and a long on out onto the boundary, you were thinking, right, I need to get this 95% bang on to hit a six, otherwise I'm in trouble. You know, the boys reckon now with the strength that they are, the two new white balls at either end make a difference because they're hitting a hard ball for the duration of the innings. Boundary ropes traditionally are now a little bit further in. The boys were reckoning they only had to get 75% of the ball now to get a six.
Wow.
You know, and so their mentality is very different in that they don't fear those players that are out there. And because, you know, because they're physically so strong and able to hit the ball into different areas, and they do play differently, you know. They white ball game, you're trying to get your front foot a bit out of the way to allow your hands and the bat access to the ball. You know, whereas back in the day, we used to play very much sideways on, so unless the ball was in the right place, you weren't really going to be able to smash it. You know, these boys just practice and train very differently now, and the mentality has grown. And what we're watching, actually, is 2020 on almost on drugs, really. You know, they're playing 2020 for 50 overs now. And that's the difference, because these boys, and also when you've got a side like England, where you've got the likes of Liam Plunkett, you know, people like that coming in at 9 or 10. I mean, that's an incredibly deep batting lineup. So provided everyone doesn't just kind of hand over the baton and just doesn't take responsibility to the next person, everyone knows they've got such a deep batting order. So it's like, we're coming at you and we're, you know, we know the balls aren't going to swing or seam, so we're coming at you and we're going to keep coming.
We're going to keep coming, quite. One question actually about England in terms of the World Cup. I mean, they're strong favourites now, aren't they?
Well, do you know,
Am I getting carried away, Darren? Is that what you're saying?
I suppose I'm being typically English now. You know, yes, 3 months, 4 months ago, you were thinking, yeah, we're massive favourites. But all of a sudden, looking over our shoulders, you see Australia all of a sudden starting to come back into it. New Zealand are always there or thereabouts. And how could you possibly write off India? You know, it's going to be a number of factors. You know, we may be playing on some drier pitches as the sort of the summer progresses, in which case, you know, the India and people like that with the spinners might come into the game. So, yeah, I still think we've got an unbelievable chance, and we potentially are still probably the favourites. But there are other sides out there that will be very dangerous, and even like the West Indies. You know, if you catch the West Indies on one of their days where Gale or Andre Russell comes off, you know, anybody can beat anybody there, especially in knockout cricket. So, you know, yes, we've got a great chance. Yes, we probably are favourites, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion by any stretch.
No, fair enough. Thanks, Darren. We'll leave it there. Nice to speak to you.
You're welcome, fellas. Take care.
See you soon. Former Surrey Notts and England A batsman Darren Bicknell there. I suppose we go back to that conversation we had a couple of hours ago about if the more people you have in the team who can change a game.
Yeah.
And England do have those game changers. And you hope that if they obviously, England, we know that once in a while England have these moments when they lose the first six for 45. And that obviously could be a disaster in a World Cup semi-final. Mm. But you would hope with the number of game changes they have now, it wouldn't happen.
But what you're finding is, yeah, that will happen less and less. It will happen less and less because when you've got so many game changers, very rarely will none of them click.
Yeah.
Very rarely will none of them click. And that's what you're hoping. So a couple of the batsmen click, one or two of the bowlers click, within 50 overs, that should be enough.
You should be okay.
That should be enough.
The World Cup starts May the 31st. Is that right? Mm. I believe it does. Around that time, May the 30th.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, I think we probably do. Paris has come into the room. Good morning, Paris.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Mooning.
some people don't know what you're on about.
Some
there.
People, yeah. I mean,
hello, hello. I grew to love it, actually.
Because
it was
loved it, from
it was so ridiculous. Oh. But the copper saying, trying to speak pidgin French, going, good morning, did make me laugh a lot. Anyway, what have you got?
Anyway.
I worked with Vicky Michelle once, actually.
Oh, really?
I worked with Vicky Michelle. I did a short film for Terry Alderton. I played a bus conductor, and Vicky Michelle was on the bus.
Oh, God.
And we had a bit of fun. It was like a little horror
film.
Are
there any clips of that? I would love to see
what?
That.
Do you know what? I'll ask Terry. I'd like to see it as well myself. I haven't seen it. Anyway, so what have you got?
Moving away from Vicky Michelle. How often do you eat with your partner?
I don't know, 3-4 times a week.
3-4 times a week,
yeah.
Paul?
Once if I'm lucky.
Right.
Because we just don't see each other. Like, we're getting late. Mind you, I got in last night and she had her mates around, so I ate by myself.
Right. No, I eat with Rosie most of the time.
Right. Well, a study says that more couples who eat together say they are happier with each other. The Marriage Foundation has shared meals ensure couples communicate properly and should make an effort not to be distracted by mobile
phones. I think there's no doubt about that. But it was interesting, actually, because I went out for a bit of lunch with my missus the other day, right? And we just chatted for about 40 minutes about this and that. Not much. Caught up. How's it going? What are you up to? What's happening here? Have you done this? You know, and to be honest, I came away thinking, yeah, it was good that we did that. Just to catch up and just go, hello, everything all right? That.
Well, we talk all day. Like we'll WhatsApp each other, or we'll talk. We'll actually phone each other about 3 or 4 times a day, every day.
It's healthy.
Done it for 30 years.
Communication.
Yeah.
Communication. It's a joke I should quote by Ivor Dembina, a venerable old comic. Communication is the most important thing. If you're making love to your wife, for God's sake, tell her. One of my favourite Dembo jokes, that is. It's a great gag, isn't it? Anyway, go on.
Anyway, a different story for you. Move away from that. Have you ever... Well, I don't know how to set this up. We're going to say, basically, headline for you. I'm going to hit the headline, right? Hero bloke gets free KFC for a year by pretending to be from head office and turning up in a limo.
He got arrested in the end, didn't he?
Did get arrested in the end. A 27-year-old student who even wore a suit and presented a fake ID to full staff into letting him eat for free.
He basically said he was from head office and he's there to check the food. So he turned up in the limo and said, and he flashed his badge at the staff. He goes, I'm here from KFC head office and I need to check your products. Can I have a bargain bucket, please, or whatever? And they bring him a bucket for nothing and he'd eat it. He goes, yes, it seems pretty good. And then he'd head off in his limo. I mean, I mean, fair play to the bloke. He must have been about 27 stone when he finished his year of eating KFC all the time.
Over what period?
Over a year.
Over a year. God, and no communique went out and said, look, someone's acting.
Well, here's the thing. When he arrived, he was so convincing, he was so confident, and colleagues from other branches of KFC know him. So he did it with a lot of branches.
Yeah.
So therefore, they go, have you had a visit from head office? And they go, well, yeah, he came across earlier. What does he look like? You know, so I'm not sure. He's planned this brilliantly.
Well, not brilliantly, because he'd end up in jail.
Is it worth it for a year of KFC?
No. It absolutely is not. It's not worth it for a year of any food.
Absolutely
It really isn't. But you know what? It's quite funny anyway that he did this. I mean, the thing, he must have sat there and gone, do you know, I don't want to pay. It's KFC. It's a bit expensive.
Yeah.
I want to have it for free. How can I get KFC for free?
It's so about
the KFC,
that.
The KFC do the black card like Nando's apparently do the black card that you can get. You know the black card.
Yeah, I know. MacD's used to have one.
Sorry?
Yeah, there was another place that used to have one.
Mackie D's?
Because I remember that they'd give them to Premier League players. I don't know why I had one.
Would they?
Oh, my kids caned it.
He
my
gets loads of gear from... when I say gear, I mean sports gear, obviously.
Yeah, sporting equipment.
I've obviously delivered gear delivered in such a big box he had to open it outside. That much gear. Yeah. Sporting equipment gear is what he gets. And he's getting free Mackie D's and
my
stuff like that.
My kids caned it. PlayStation.
I mean, listen, I understand this stuff.
Just blimey, smiling,
it's all coming out now. No, but I understand this stuff. This is how it goes. You play football at a high level. You know, I mean, as a comic, I've had bits and pieces given to you. Do get that money goes to money and all that. I understand. But obviously, this KFC guy, he wasn't getting enough KFC.
How he thought about it is for me, like you just said.
A limo, though. That seems a bit ridiculous. The bloke in head office is going around in a limo.
How much you pay for the limo, okay? If you got the limo, I'm thinking about it logistically.
He could have bought the KFC for cheap,
and he
wouldn't be in jail. The bloke's an idiot. That's the
limo costs 50 quid an hour.
The limo costs an enormous amount
of
money.
The bargain bucket costs $8.99.
How much can you eat? How much KFC? I'm sorry, that bucket wasn't enough for me to properly taste how good it is. I need another bucket.
No, he's got the 50. He's used the limo all day, and he's gone. He's hit about five or six of them during the day. He's got to make his money's worth.
He hasn't thought this through.
He hasn't thought it through.
Do you like KFC? It's nice, KFC. It is nice.
I've only ever eaten KFC once.
Right. Yeah. I've had it a couple of times. It's nice. My son likes it.
Many moons ago. And it's always like you come out of somewhere and you're a bit hungry. And that's and there's nothing else on, so I'm going to go and get some of that.
Yeah, it's there for you, but don't turn up in a limo and tell them you're from head office, because you'll end up in jail.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, the only time I ever tried KFC was in Thorpe Park, because all that's available in Thorpe Park is like KFC, Burger King.
Is that right?
Which is like a combination of fast food combined with fast rides.
That sounds like a very bad idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember doing a student gig, one of those Cambridge University balls, you know, those summer balls. They're lovely,
right? Which college?
Do you know, I can't remember, but it was blooming lovely. And I did a gig there and they had fairground rides, but they also had tequila slammers with champagne. Champagne tequila slammers. So you're getting a couple of these inside you and then you're going on a ride. People projectile vomiting off the ride.
Oh,
I mean, you didn't want to be standing in front of the ride watching them riding the thing. It's horrendous.
Yeah.
Gig was
I mean, laugh. I mean, some rides you got like phones drop down, wallets. You don't want to be on the ride where you just like vomit from above.
No, you definitely don't. I don't want to be in any ride where anyone's vomiting anywhere, to be honest with you. But it didn't help. It didn't help with those. So you had one at Thorpe Park.
I had one at Thorpe Park. Same, you know, you get those pictures on rides. There's a ride at Thorpe Park called Stealth, which was the tallest ride in Europe.
Right.
Still the tallest ride in the UK, where you literally just go straight up, straight down. It's like really quick. Like,
how long for?
It's like 15 seconds.
About an hour and a half.
And how long? No, the only other, how long you queue for?
Well, I got in early, so I wasn't queuing.
You could
for very
queue for
long,
half an hour for 15 seconds. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
It's thrilling, mate. It is thrilling.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
On that ride,
I quite like a fairground.
I hate queuing.
You get a picture
taken.
I'm
a snob.
Right, so your picture taken right at the start when you kind of just jolt forwards. Now, my hair was even longer than it is now. Like, viewers at home, listeners at home, I've got quite long hair going on.
Yes.
And, I'm not particularly fond of rides. So my face is gritted teeth with the hair just streaming behind into the person behind me.
Like, a dog with his head out the window.
Yeah. Right. It was basically that.
Paris has got his head out the window. You're right, Paris. All right. All right. All right. All right.
It's slightly concerning when I'm driving. But,
yeah, anyway. All right. Anyway, what else you got?
Another story for you. Almost all the 5 billion bananas that Britons eat each year come from a single variety, which was created over 180 years ago. but a disease is threatening to wipe them out.
Oh, my God.
They could be gone forever. A life without bananas.
Well, that'd be a shame, wouldn't it? Because I do like bananas, don't you? I mean, they're lovely, aren't they?
I do love a banana,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, why not? And so what are we doing about it? Is somebody on this?
Well, the Banana Trust.
The Banana Trust. There's a banana.
Is that
trust.
Real?
No, there's not a banana. Trust.
Okay.
The bananas, you know, in, bananas in pajamas are on the case.
You could have told me. I'm right. Okay.
The banana.
Banana
trust.
Number 1, 2, and banana number 2.
Yeah.
This, apparently, the trouble is banana farming is monocultural. It means plantations have only a single species, and because it's not diverse enough, that these bananas
after a while,
and it's this one disease is potentially going to wipe them out.
So why don't, what you need to do then, I guess, is to have a farm, a multi-use farm. They grow potatoes over here, they grow green beans over there, and they grow bananas, and they swap the fields around every couple of years and do it that way. Is that possible?
Well, it's...
You know what? The truth is, I'm not a botanist,
well,
so I don't know.
Prepare for some botany lesson, Mr.
Stone.
Oh,
I love the botany
lessons. Basically, one main type of the 50% of bananas we eat are Cavendish sweet banana.
Right.
That's what the name of the banana. Right. So it's, I feel this is getting very serious. But Cavendish sweet banana, which is kind of what the bananas we kind of know and love. Some people really enjoy them. I don't particularly. But, you know, you get other ones like plantains, and which are kind of banana-based stuff. Basically, and Cavendish sweet bananas are 99% of all exports. So it's one, in essence, I want to say breed of banana. That's not quite right. Type of banana.
Yeah.
So that's been, you know... If there's only one type and it's not diversified,
that's a worry.
It's a worry.
We need some sort of mixed race banana.
That's what we need. That is the answer.
Dual heritage banana.
Yeah, that'll work. I like the sound of that. Okay. Well, you know what? If somebody knows what they're doing, you know, get them together.
Banana farmers, pay attention.
Yeah.
National Lottery story for you. National Lottery, they did a new game called Set for Life, right? They've done 17 draws, no winners.
Right.
No winners.
How
so punters are starting to get a little bit suspicious of the game, considering that they haven't had to pay out at all. So it's got a £3 million jackpot paid at 10 grand a month for 30 years. So that's how it works, but no one's won.
Yeah, okay. I mean, is someone going to win at some point?
You'd imagine so.
One would imagine that the entries would drop off quite considerably if there's actually no chance of winning.
Someone better win it soon, mate.
Yeah. They really.
Or they're doing it to make the $3 million first.
Can they engineer some? Can they engineer it so somebody does win?
I don't know. Does that technically? I don't know what the competition standards authority would
say. Do you know what? I don't. Not only am I not a botanist, I'm not a member of the competition standards authority as well. But I am one of the founding members of the Banana Trust.
The Banana Trust.
That's the main thing, really. I devote most of my energy now to
can't
that,
shorten that
to be honest.
To BT, can
the
you?
No, BT's well, we tried taken. To. We tried to. We said, can we do BT? They said, it's gone. I went, oh, no. What are we going to call ourselves? So that is part of the problem, really.
That's why the Banana Trust members are, you know, spread far and wide, but there's not enough of them.
There's no communication. We haven't got a website. Anyway, what were we saying?
Wait,
we were talking
the National Lottery game.
I don't know. The National Lottery game. Somebody needs to win and quick.
And
really?
Quick.
17 draws.
17 draws. It reminds me, like, when I was at university, me and my housemates, a brand of crisps were doing a draw. Like, if you get a load of crisps and you scan it in and you get letters and you can win a holiday.
Yeah.
And we spent, you know, we bought a lot of crisps.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of crisps. Our front room at the university house was just full of crisps, and we had like a separate pile for the wrappers we'd used. Had we scanned these ones, whatever. About 2 months in, we noticed we're getting all these letters and we weren't getting any vowels. And then this Chris company announced 2 months in, oh, now we're releasing all the ones with the vowels in.
Brilliant. Cheeky. That is so cheeky. So you had all these crisps. Well, all you could do with the crisps was eat them.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the worst thing in the world. They're not.
Like, you could scan in 5 a day, and we were, instead of having our 5 fruit and veg, we were having 5 packets of crisps.
5 packets
of
crisps.
A bit of cheese and onion, a bit of prawn cocktail, salt and vinegar, you know.
I understand there's basic smart. Different ideas about what different flavours of crisps. Thank you, though.
You're very
just
welcome.
Just in case people were wondering what sort of crisps. And you were there. Cheese and onion, prawn cocktail and salt and vinegar.
What's going on between you two?
Sometimes the information is great. Sometimes it's...
roast chicken ones as well.
Yeah, there are a number of other different flavours. Yeah. Just do this for the rest of the show.
List
people
the flavors
really
of
like this nonsense.
I feel, you know, if they're still listening at this point.
Right.
That was that story. Got? No, that wasn't. Well, that was just that was that story.
Oh, right. Okay. Well,
have we abruptly finished that one?
I think we have. Let's have one more.
Let's have one more story. Well, let's go a bit. Yesterday, Eurovision Song Contest
semi-finals. Now, yes, that's true. Last minute winner.
Back post. Now, earlier, Paul, you said you weren't particularly fond of Eurovision.
No.
Why? That's all I'm asking. Why?
Didn't like gays.
I can't believe you've gone there.
That's a joke, by the way.
It is a joke.
It is a joke. He loves the gays.
Go in there.
Why don't you like...
Well, I've got long enough to cuss you now.
Why don't...
I would have cursed you now.
Why don't you like...
I just don't like it. I just think... I mean, I was from the Terry Wogan era, where it was... He made it quite funny.
I'm not knocking
Graham Norton. It's just the quality of the music, the bands, the fact that we haven't got a chance of winning. The fact that it's just not fair. That's why I don't like it.
You know, I don't care about us. I just like the fun of it.
Yeah, you would.
I really don't care whether Britain wins or not.
It's rubbish. And it goes on too long.
Michael Rice, bigger than us.
Bigger than us.
Bigger than us.
I mean, our last time we finished anywhere near... Well, we finished fifth.
Have we carved his name into the wooden spoon? Because that's what we're going to get.
Well, it's usually us or France near the bottom. Yeah. I mean,
possible.
They dislike the French.
Political now, isn't it?
Well, it is.
And then someone jumped on the stage while a couple of years... Nah, the whole thing's not...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's in Israel this time. Good luck to the person that wants to jump on the stage.
There'll be protests.
There'll be protests. But I mean, I don't see anyone...
But that's one of the problems for me. All of a sudden, it's political statements. It's not now just about the...
Israel is a highly politicised country for all sorts of reasons. But... yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I will watch it on Saturday. Are you going to be watching it?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Three, two, one.
Well, at least something you two can agree on for once.
Listen, it's
right at the end.
Eurovision is great. I am what I am. It's fantastic. I cannot wait. Very, very excited.
Love sports.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast Podcast Edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.